and welcome to Phoenix Vision. I am Jess Farmer and my guest today is Amy Buchler, who is a fantastic holistic practitioner working with many different people to support the healing process. So we spoke about Amy's organization, The Rise Room, which helps to empower people nutritionally, physically and spiritually. We spoke about some of the challenges we face within our modern world in terms of our mental health. So we got into anxiety, depression, and some of the things that you can do about it if that is something that you're struggling with. We spoke a lot about the empowerment of young women, as well as some of the masculine and feminine dynamics within our society, and some of the things that need to change for us to move forward as a humanity in a whole, happy and vital way. So hope you enjoy this podcast. Much love. And thanks to you, Amy, for coming on. Hello and welcome to Phoenix Vision. I am here with the awesome Amy Buchler, who's an expert trainer, naturopathic nutritionist, biohacker, breathwork and meditation teacher, and world champion bikini bodybuilder, aka a freaking badass. She runs a fantastic organization called The Rise Room, which is a spiritual hub designed to optimize physical, nutritional, and spiritual well-being, mainly working with women. And we've been buddies for quite a few years now, having met at a weekly meditation group run by Xian, who we have much love for. So big love. So Amy, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing?
I'm good, Jess. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited for our talk.
Sweet. Yeah, me too. So I'd love to kick off just by asking you a little bit about your journey. What led you into helping people, or more specifically helping women in the way that you're doing now? And yeah, what was your path into doing what you do now, Amy?
Well, I always was a dancer, so I was always very much connected to my body and movement. And I literally was a dancer from the age of 2. All the way up till I was 18. But when I was 17, I stepped foot into a gym. My sister asked me to come with her and I really didn't want to go. I was like, God, I'm exhausted. I'm dancing so much. Like, the last thing I want to do is go to a gym. But anyway, I went. And a trainer came up to me at the time called Dominic, who I have much love for. And he asked me and my sister if we needed any help. And I actually was curious as to, you know, how lifting weights worked. At the time, I had no clue. I just saw people doing it. Instagram was fairly new. I was like seeing all these people lifting. I was like, what is this about? You know, so he showed me, you know, how to lift that day a little bit, showed me how to squat, showed me how to do this and that. And then we ended up working together for like 2 years. He was my trainer for 2 years. Pushed me onto someone else called Gus. Again, so much love for, who taught me so much about training and how to move the body and how to lift weights. And it was just really inspiring to me, so much so that I decided to leave dance and become a personal trainer. So I went to LA. I traveled to LA to do a personal training course and to study nutrition. And then when I came back to London, I, you know, was very curious as to how I could take my body to the next level. So I entered into bikini bodybuilding competitions, and in 9 months went from the UK championships for 2 federations, picked one, went to European championships and then world championships at 19 at this point. And it was mental. I did not expect any of it. I just wanted an experience. But I think I was so motivated and disciplined and curious about the level of discipline I was able to achieve. And for me, it was more about that than it was about achieving the medal, which also felt great. But it was more about how much discipline do I have? What am I capable of? So whilst I was bodybuilding, I had come back to London, obviously, and I was building my own personal training business, started training people and you know, giving them basic nutrition ideas. And a couple of years later, I started studying naturopathic medicine, specialized in nutrition. And with you, probably at the same time as I was bodybuilding, I met Xian and started on an incredible journey. He kind of propelled me forward on my spiritual path and ended up experiencing a lot in that year and the following year, a big shift in my consciousness and awareness and spiritual journey. And it was amazing. And so then I decided to incorporate all of it into my business. So it was training, nutrition, and meditation, and then later on breath work, which is now what the Rise Room is about. So that's the journey.
Awesome. And yeah, like just a couple of things in there. Like I love what you're saying about, you know, you got into the bodybuilding and the competing, not necessarily to win a title. It's more like the process of like seeing what you could get out of yourself. I think that's really badass because, it's funny, like a lot of people are really, really focused on outcome goals rather than focusing on the process. Whereas when you're focusing more on the process and getting the process correct, you get the outcome anyway, but it's kind of like a completely different flip. I much prefer focusing on the process rather than the pressure of this like big outcome goal. I tend to see that it works like a little bit better.
Yeah, I think it works better, but also you're focused on the present moment when you're working through the process and not just focused on the destination. You're present with what you're doing, and it becomes way more enjoyable than trying to reach this incredibly difficult goal. When I started bodybuilding, I never ever thought I'd be on the world championship stage. Like, what, you know? I just was so present, enjoying every moment of the process because I just couldn't believe what was going on. You know, it was like I surprised myself.
Yeah. What's it like being like, damn, I'm in the world championship? Like, how did this happen kind of thing? What was it like being in that arena, being in that sphere?
I just felt like so excited, super on top of the world, because I was so excited that I did it. You know, it was like, wow, you did this. Like, that's cool, you know? And I also built something super important, which I talk to my clients about all the time. And this is a trust with myself. This process of discipline that I had to build over those 9 months really taught me how to trust myself. Like, I knew that if I said to myself, you're not having that extra bit of chocolate, or you're not missing a gym session, that I knew I could trust myself. And that's really powerful, because a lot of the time we, you know, when we're going through something difficult, or we have a pain, or we have a habit that's not necessarily good for us or not serving our higher self, we find it very hard to trust ourselves, because we want to stop that habit on one hand, but on the other hand, we keep repeating it. So there's no self-trust in the moment of like, oh, I know that if I tell myself that I'm going to stop, that I am going to stop. And it was kind of this process of building that trust, which was really powerful for the rest of my life, because now I know what I'm capable of. If I put my mind to something, I know I trust and believe that I can get there, you know?
Given
the right circumstances.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's also like cultivating that inner integrity with yourself, and then that feeds out into everything you do, making, you know, your word is bond. So keeping your word with yourself means that you can keep your word with other people, and then, you know, create a life of integrity from that discipline.
100%.
Really strong link there. And yeah, I wanted to talk as well of what you're saying about Xi'an. Just want to take this opportunity to just send so much love to Xi'an. Like, I was speaking to him, or I was speaking to you, Xi'an, because you're going to listen to this this morning. And just like, really great to connect as always. And you know, what Xi'an created and still continues to create, you know, he's created beautiful communities of like-minded people who have come together for their self-development. And, you know, I think everything Xi'an's created is so bonded by love. You know, all of our crew, and, you know, some people came, some people went, and like, but it was all, you know, the common thread was very much love. And so just like, big love to Xi'an.
Yeah, big love, honestly.
So let's get into Rise Room. I'd love to get the lowdown on Rise Room. So what is the Rise Room? How does it work? And who do you help?
So the Rise Room is a transformational health service for women mainly. But there's two sides of it. So we have the method, the service side. So we help women optimize their physical, nutritional, and spiritual well-being. We do this through one-to-one gym training and small group training, which we're introducing soon, personalized nutrition programs, and then one-on-one and group breathwork sessions. And then we have the other side of the Rise Room, which is the experiences. And this is where we hold monthly events ranging from transformational breathwork and sound healing to cacao ceremonies to movement and nutrition talks. And it's really, the experiences are really about building a community. They're for men and women as well, so it's not just for the women. And it's really about building a community of people who, you know, are looking for a place where they can meet other like-minded individuals, but also work on their healing and not necessarily alone, because sometimes that's really hard when you're, you know, some of the ladies who are doing the program with me, you know, it's hard when you're doing it alone. So I'm very much very close with them. We speak every day, all of them. I speak with all of them every day. Making sure that they're hitting their goals, that, you know, if they need any help, I'm here for them at any time of the day during their program. But it's hard, you know, when they're going through emotional turmoil or trying to move past certain habits or, you know, emotional healing, to do it on your own all the time is quite difficult. So these events and these experiences are really for that. They're to bring people together to have a great time, but also to dive deep into healing through the breath, through sound, through movement, and obviously as well to gain more knowledge on all of these aspects of well-being to take into their lives with them.
That's really nice, really nice. I'm looking forward to coming to the event on the 26th. Is it sound? It's a sound event, right? Sound
breath, breathwork and sound. Yeah, it's going to be amazing. 26th, awesome. Feb.
So maybe we could chat about it at the end. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, I understand you guys have got like you're aiming for like 3 events a month or so.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Aiming for 3 events a month. We're looking to get into the retreat space as well. So lots of things bubbling up.
Awesome. So I'd love to kind of like hone in on this word healing. And I'd love to ask you what's your understanding in internalization of the word healing, because like I think it can mean so many different things and mean so many different things to different people. So what does it mean to you?
That's a really nice question. I've never been asked that before. And I would say for me, healing is understanding the aspects of yourself that are traumatized, you know, that are in pain, that are not serving your highest good or who you want to be, and transmuting that energy into one of positivity and one of like a fuel source to become the person you want to be. But I think the process of healing definitely varies for everybody. But the main thing is, you know, firstly, I think there's 3 stages to it. Firstly, it's accepting and becoming aware of what it is that needs to be healed, because nothing can happen without that. You know, you can tell someone that, you know, a family member or a friend that they need help with something because you might see it, but unless they're willing to accept it, nothing's going to change. And so I think the acceptance comes first. And then it moves into action, and then it moves into deeper action. And what I mean by that is there's action that you initially take because you are aware that there's something that needs to be healed. Perhaps you go to therapy, or you take an initial action to change a specific habit. But what you realize over time is usually that's just scratching the surface, you know, of what actually needs healing. So then it's deeper action, which is really coming face to face with those aspects that are dark, you know, and that are traumatized and that need help. You know, the little child inside that usually hasn't had the love, attention, affection, felt worthy, you know, all of these things. I think it's just a lot of it is inner child work, from my experience, really healing wounds from childhood a lot of the time. And Yeah, it's quite a vast explanation, but
That's great. That's great. And yeah, absolutely. Because like so much of the child's development, you know, like kids are absolute sponges. And, you know, the parents, when we're in those early ages, they're like God. And also, you know, how we experience our parents is also how we internalize our own masculine and feminine energies. So, you know, if the parents had some good ideas, then we take them on board. And if they had some not so good ideas, we take them on board as well. And, you know, I think spirituality, like a large part of it is the journey of learning to parent oneself. And, you know, looking at what worked for mum and dad and what didn't work for mum and dad, because, you know, we inherit the programming. And, you know, Carl Jung said that the children are tasked with the unfinished business of the parents, and the children are there to highlight to the parents that which is unconscious within. So this is where we get this like crazy mirror effect, which is why a big reason why family dynamics can be difficult, because, well, the kids are professional button pushers because that's their job. And they're there to highlight to the parents that which they ultimately need to heal. So yeah, no, that's really beautiful. Do you in terms of the breath work, are you able to access certain things with the inner child through the breath work, or does it kind of come up as a natural process, or is it something that you might like guide and direct into a certain place? How does your breath work facilitation work, Amy?
So when it's one-on-one, it's very much tailored to the individual. So there's different types of breath work sessions as such, but let's talk about transformational breath work, which is breathing deep for long periods of time to access, you know, different parts of the psyche that are within the subconscious. So really accessing the subconscious mind and having access to trauma that's stored in the body. So with transformational breathwork one-on-one sessions, it's very much personalized to the individual. So we'll have a conversation before. And the more detail I have on what that person is trying to release and that person's trauma, the more I can go there with them in the session. A lot of the time, it is to do with childhood. You know, we end up, you know, there's something they want to release, such as their anger towards their partner. But then we dive deeper and we always find out and understand that it comes from childhood trauma. And it's usually the case. So it's interesting, but it's usually the case. So that's what we do with the one-on-one. And then the group sessions, there is always a theme. Sometimes it is childhood related and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's less about releasing something and more about bringing something in. So calling what your desires are into your life, calling in, you know, where you want to be, who you want to be into your life, more than just letting go of things that you want to let go of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Yeah. It sounds really deep in terms of what you're able to access through it. And I met just before the call, we were talking about, because like you used to be a personal trainer for quite a while, and you know, you're talking about the work you're doing now being so much more fulfilling than when you were physically training people in the gym. So, why is that, like, the work you're doing now so much more fulfilling than what you were doing before? It's not to say
Well,
that, sorry, it's not to say that what you were doing before wasn't fulfilling. You just have this
before,
level, like, yeah.
for sure. I mean, look, before, like when you're just training people and helping them with their nutrition, it's really, really wonderful. And I do it still to this day. I still do it, and I love it. But usually the reason why they're having a problem with their nutrition, or they're not able to stick to it, or they want to change their bodies and their physiques is because of something deeper. There's a deeper reason why they want to do that. Maybe they don't feel worthy enough. Maybe there's a habit that they can't change and they're binge eating, but there's always a deeper reason as to why they're doing those things. And I always knew that, and I always knew that there was an aspect that I needed to bring in. And when I was bringing in meditation into my work, I found that people found it very hard to stick to because you sit in a position, you breathe a little, and then, you know, you're trying to basically, you know, I would teach them a lot of transformational, sorry, TM, sorry, and transcendental meditation. So, you know, giving them a mantra to focus on, but a lot of the time they couldn't stick to it because their mind is just going insane. They have 15 minutes in the morning before the kids wake up. They have 10 minutes at night before the husband or wife comes into the room. And they just have no time to get into that theta brainwave state, you know, because it's taking too much time. So when I brought in breath work, it's very rapid. You know, you can breathe for 1-2 minutes and your mind can very rapidly enter that theta brainwave state if you're breathing in a specific way. And that's what I found, is that my clients were sticking to breath work as a daily practice with no problem compared to meditation. And then once they did their breath work practice, they would usually sit and meditate for 10, 15 minutes because you're in such a state of bliss that that's what you want to do. So as a result, they were waking up earlier, giving themselves more time to do that. And what was your question? Can you remind me? I'm going on a tangent.
No, that's all cool. All cool. I was asking why the kind of deeper work that you're doing now is more fulfilling.
So as a result, obviously seeing people stick to a practice is more fulfilling. You know that the work you're doing is actually getting somewhere. But also what happens is with transformational breath work, people are really going on a deep dive into their subconscious and into their traumas and challenges from their past. And they're releasing a lot of those things. And they're leaving one 60 to 90 minute session feeling lighter than they've ever felt. People having incredible results. You know, this one lady, she came to one event. She had lost her menstrual cycle, was off for like 5 years. Next day, came back. Wow. And another woman, she hadn't spoken to her father in 20 years. There was so much resentment, so much anger. She happened to come to an event where the theme was releasing, you know, resentment and anger and bringing in forgiveness. So she happened to come to that event, and the following day, you know, immediately contacted her father, and then they had coffee that week, and it had been 20 years. And it's like, that's what can happen, you know, and it's not me, it's the breath. It's the power of the breath, and it's showing people that they have this insane tool with them at all times, this powerful tool at all times. It's free and it's with you always. And it's an incredible tool to, you know, you can play with the nervous system, you can regulate the nervous system, but you can also do deep healing work depending on how you're breathing. And so it's just super powerful and therefore super meaningful.
Yeah, straight. That is extremely powerful. Like that's an amazing result with the woman with the menstrual cycle. Like literally, like that is quite something. And you know, because like the breath really is this master key for the system. You know, the key chief regulator of everything in the body is comes back to the breath. And you know, so many people aren't breathing with like in the best way, you know. And I think this comes back to the society that we're living in, you know, especially in a city like London, where if everything is like so do go go go, you know, it like pretty much puts people into a stressed, hypersensitized place within themselves, their mind, their nervous system. Because the mind and body is connected in a seamless way, it's the same thing. Any kind of emotional stresses we're feeling in the mind get represented in the body. And I know that, you know, when we are living in this like go, 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 do, do, do mentality, this tends to send us into this kind of like chest breathing pattern, which then I know like activates the stress response. Whereas if someone's breathing correct, and like, you know, stress response is responsible for a whole host of challenges within the body, you know, it's the root of so many health conditions and health problems. So, you know, if people were breathing correctly, this could en masse, imagine like the cumulative effect across the world if everyone was breathing diaphragmatically into their belly button, and you know, and taking the time to get present with the breath. And
100%. I think people don't realize how powerful the breath is, you know. And the minute you tell someone to breathe who will think anything is woo-woo, it's funny because they actually are like, oh, you know, none of that woo-woo stuff. And you think for a second, hold on, breathing is something you do every day. There's science, tons of science to back up the importance of breathing and the methods and techniques you can use to enhance your health. It's not woo-woo, but it's categorized in that way. And I think it's interesting because I think the more science there is on it and the more that people engage with the breath, it's so transformational and it's so quick to see how powerful it is that I think the more people engage with it just once, the more you know people will understand that it's way more than just a woo-woo experience.
Yeah, yeah. So they come for their first breathwork session, see Jesus, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I find it really funny because I used to be one of these like, oh, no, thank you, woo-woo stuff. Like, that used to be me. And then I started kind of getting into things, started noticing differences within myself. And now I started looking at all of these woo-woo people. I'm like, hang on, these guys are actually really happy. And, yeah. You know, their lives are looking like, there's something in this, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we are these woo-woo people ourselves.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Because like there's such a stigma around spirituality and all these different things that we do. And but then you look at all the people who are engaged in those activities and who take care of their health and who work on their spiritual health, and they are genuinely happier people. You know, there is a lot more peace, a lot more joy, a lot more flow. A lot more, well, it is what it is kind of attitude, you know, just trust in the process. And you kind of let go of control, you know, when you start on this journey, you just, there's no need because you feel safe because you know that no matter what, there's something that's always going to be guiding you in one direction or another, you know? And there's for me at least, there was a feeling of safety that arose and continues to arise through the journey of spirituality, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I find it brings meaning to life. And, you know, I used to be like quite atheist as well. And like, I think it's quite a lonely existence to think that we're just here by accident and, you know, just a coagulation of cells that have evolved over millions of years, and there's no meaning or purpose to anything. Mm-hmm. It's quite like a lonely place to be, you know. Whereas, and you know, that's going to drive our behaviors, our perception of life. Whereas, you know, if we're like understanding or having a knowingness that like there is a deeper meaning to things, then this tends to bring more purpose. And you know, they found in numerous scientific studies that the biggest marker of someone who lives to a ripe old age is living a life of purpose and meaning. Mm. So, you know, and you know what? Even if it is all made up, if you're living this way, you're happier and live a better life. So, you know, I don't think it is, but like
100%, even if it is cool, I'd rather live believing than not believing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think we're in this like really, really interesting time at the moment where like spirituality is exploding, and you know, we've got amazing organizations like the ones that you've put together. There's many different organizations all across the world doing so many different things. There's retreat centers popping up left, right and center. So I'm observing a really interesting thing, you know, because like 5 years ago, this was not really, it was just about starting to gather some momentum. Now it feels like the wave is kind of like breaking on spirituality, and like lots of people, I dislike the term like waking up, quote unquote, but you know, there's a lot of people coming much more into a spiritual paradigm, and a lot of people are feeling the benefits of it, and it's becoming a lot more normalized and mainstream. And this is where I think like, you know, organizations such as the Rise Room are really important, because I think now, especially with some of the events of the last few years, which has caused this huge global shakeup, you know, people are in a fearful place. They're in a place whereby mental health isn't in the best place generally. And, you know, I think people are like looking for leadership in terms of, in a world that's basically going crazy, you know, So, and this is what I kind of want to pivot towards. I mean, I see yourself as very much an embodiment of a leader among young women in a time whereby the world very much needs leaders and guides. So I'd love to ask you, like, what are some of the common struggles or challenges that you're seeing young women faced with at the moment? And what advice could you offer them to help them move through these challenges?
Okay. I would say the main things that I'm seeing are stress, anxiety, eating disorders. And starting with stress and anxiety, I think there's been, as you've said, a huge shakeup. And people started during COVID to question who they are, what life they really want to live, do they really want to be with their partners, you know, started to question all these things. And I think it brought a lot of turmoil to people because, you know, a lot of people fell into a deep depression during COVID. And there's no surprise because the minute you stop acting like a robot and you actually start to sit with yourself and your thoughts and you start to feel things a little bit deeper, you know, that is essentially an awakening moment, right? Is when you actually start to question your life. Who am I? Like, what do I want to do with my life? Why am I here? What is my purpose? Do I really want to be with my partner? Do I really want to live in this country? You know, all of these, like, this self-inquiry is part of an awakening. But people assume an awakening is something, you know, happy and light and joyful and smiley faces everywhere. And it's not. A lot of the time, you know, these questions are very daunting. And to actually sit with them and sit with your feelings is also super daunting in a world where we're taught not to do that. And we're taught to be extremely robotic. So as a result, you know, I'm finding that a lot of the girls that I work with and see and friends and family are deeply anxious, deeply stressed or depressed. And a lot of them are self-medicated because, you know, they've freaked out that they are depressed. They've gone to a doctor. The doctor's prescribed them antidepressants. And now they're on antidepressants at the age of 24, 23, you know, 25, 26. Rather than letting the emotions come in and flow in, because they have no tools. There's no tool. They're not taught ever by a teacher, by a parent, to feel the emotions. And for me, I learned this, to be honest, from my partner. When I first met him years ago, I remember sitting with him and he just like put his hand on my heart and he was like, "You know, it's okay to feel, right? Like, you can feel your emotions." And I was like, "What's he doing? Oh my gosh." You know, like 7 years ago this happened. And he really, in that moment, just something happened, something shifted. And then when I met Xi'an and we went through this whole journey, crazy stuff shifted, you know? And I think that that's what the girls need today. Not only the girls, but everybody really needs, is to allow the emotions to flow. When they come, let them come, invite them in, build a dialogue. Because if you don't build a dialogue with the emotion, it becomes a monologue. You identify as that emotion. And that's when you can get stuck in a cycle and it can get really painful because you identify as the emotion of depression or anxiety. And therefore, how is there a way out if that's who you are? Whereas if you create a dialogue and you separate the emotion from you, you're able to observe it from an eagle's eye perspective, have a conversation and understand that it's a part of you in that moment, but it's not who you are. And that's what I would say is number one. I've had this conversation many times with the girls and it's just letting the emotions come in, letting them come in and then using tools like breathwork to help move them. And then in terms of nutrition,
I just want to dive in there. That is one of the most powerful things I've heard, like statements, like if you don't turn it into a dialogue, it will just be a monologue.
Yeah.
That is so damn powerful. That's so many things. It's like really, because, you know, we are taught that the emotional, negative emotion is something to stamp down and not feel at all costs and, you know, like turn away from, which only, you know, causes more challenges in of itself. You know, we end up in the monologue situation rather than constructively working with the emotion, because the emotion is trying to tell us something, right?
100%. And that's where I think like many of our struggles are coming from today, is the disconnect from our emotions, because, you know, some of them are so strong that we can't help but feel them, but we're brilliant at suppressing. We are expert emotional suppressors. And we've been guided to that place through society. Society is very much in favor of suppressing the emotions. And, you know, if you're in a workplace, you can't show emotion. If you're a man, you can't show emotion. If you're a woman, you're too sensitive if you show emotion. So there's no way you can win.
Yeah. I mean, like what kind of comes in I think it's a wider challenge of the repression of the feminine energy within our society, because thinking is aligned with the masculine polarity, and then the opposition of thinking is feeling, which is aligned with the feminine polarity. So, you know, we're living in a patriarchal dominated society whereby there's been like a repression of the feminine energy for hundreds of thousands of years. So, you know, could it be like symptomatic of this kind of repression of the emotions, this repression of the feeling feminine capacity? Could this be a result of the kind of over masculinized dominance within our society?
I think so. You put that really nicely. And I think so. And I think it's all coming out. Hence why there is an epidemic of depression, you know, and there is anxiety all over the world. And, you know, because the emotions need to flow. You know, you shake a bottle with like a bottle of sparkling water, you know, and then you open the cap and it's going to explode, right? And what's happening now is we've been shaking this bottle for thousands of years, and suddenly now we're starting to open the cap and it's starting to... And there's going to be a point, I think, very soon where it's just going to explode. And we're going to go through really difficult times. You know, there's going to be, I mean, you can already see it. I'm sure you see it in your practice as well, is the amount of depression and anxiety is through the roof, mental health through the roof. And in young kids as well, I work with some 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and their mental health is unbelievably bad. It's terrible. They have no sense of worthiness. Neither do their friends, apparently. It's now frowned upon to compliment each other. If someone says you're beautiful, I love your dress, it's like, you can't say that. She explained it to me. This is insane.
Why?
She goes, you can't say that, because then it's suggesting that I don't think I'm beautiful already. And I was like, wow, this is wow. You know, so she, if someone says she's beautiful, it's like rude. So it's all going mental. And
yeah, right.
I think the levels of depression and anxiety and stress are going to go through the roof even more than they are now. But it has to kind of get to that point before the water can settle. The cap has to come off, you know? And that's where I think.
Unfortunately, I agree with you. I think it is going to be this process of things getting worse before they can get better. And this is where, you know, alternative therapies, such as what you're offering, what I'm offering, and many other people who have interviewed on this podcast are offering, are going to be so prominent and valuable for people, because, you know, we are facing like epidemic of mental health, physical health. It's the same thing, really. But, you know, and I think it's going to be really important for people to start looking at ways to empower them with their health, because, you know, I hear this story time and time again about, you know, someone going to the doctors who's having a bit of a bad time, let's say, with certain things. And there is, there's a certain way of dealing with things within the medical paradigm, which is looking more at giving the person antidepressants rather than getting to the root cause of looking at what's happened to create the mental health challenge. And, you know, I remember when we spoke on the phone, and what you just iterated just now about, you know, it actually being like this breaking point of crisis, which looks really bad when you're in it, but actually could be the dawning of something that will actually turn out really good, because actually this crisis is just a recognition that the way you're living life isn't the way you want to live life, or maybe should be living life. So even though that crisis point when you're in it is really bad, that could actually be quite a good, like the awakening that you need to change paradigm. I mean, I had one of those 10 years ago. My God, sent me into an absolute spiral of real difficulty for like a year. But it was the formulative thing that got me to the place whereby I'm having this conversation now.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, I think we are in this kind of paradigm whereby, again, it comes back to not feeling the emotions. It comes to numbing the pain rather than listening to the pain and what's the message that this pain is coming to my life to try and tell me.
Yeah, I think so many people are in survival mode that, you know, they can't feel the pain, because if they feel the pain, they can't take care of their kids. And if they can't take care of their kids, there's a problem. And it's like a domino effect. And I think it comes back to the way we live, the way our society is like functions and is formed. And it's all kind of it all works together. The food system and how messed up it is, to then also the medical system, how, you know, people are prescribing, you know, heavy meds very easily. You walk in with a stomach ache, you're prescribed antibiotics straight away. You know, it's insane. There's no look at the emotional, or there's no holistic view of an individual prior to giving them medication. The food in the supermarket is filled with crap that destroys our bodies and, you know, numbs our mind. And it all works in sync, you know? And then people also wonder why they're feeling anxious and depressed. You know, if they haven't got necessarily an emotional or deep emotional thing going on in their life, you know, a lot of the time you can just feel these things from the food you're eating. You know, you can go to somewhere like Planet Organic, Whole Foods, or these wonderful, healthy supermarkets, and there's crap everywhere, you know? And there's foods with, you know, pumped full of seed oils and chemicals and toxins everywhere. And no one's educated. That's the problem. And I think now is a time where people are starting to realize that if they want to be healthier, they need to take their health into their own hands, because no one's going to do it for them. There's no God. Doctors are amazing people. Trust me, I know many incredible doctors that do the most amazing work. But our society has viewed doctors, a man or a woman in a white gown, as a God. They put their trust and their life into that individual without taking any responsibility. And that's a problem.
You know, the priest or the parental figure. And, you know, when you're handing over your responsibility, or in other words, your ability to respond to an external authority figure, which may not be acting with the best paradigm that's most in line with and conducive to creating health, you're going to run into problems.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think if we are in this paradigm of looking to this external authority figure, like an external parent figure, then this takes us away from the ability to take responsibility for ourselves, keeping us in the place of a child.
Mm-hmm.
A child isn't able to take responsibility for itself until it grows to a certain age of maturity, when it can start doing so, therefore having the ability to respond and taking that responsibility. So, and, you know, we're living in this modern world whereby I was talking to someone about it the other day, like, you know, we have to be conscious about health. We have to educate ourselves about nutrition, movement, our thoughts, our emotions, our connection with self.
Yeah.
Because we're living in this modern world, which is almost pretty much like rigged against that in many ways. So, you know, there's toxicity everywhere. You know, the list is long of different bombardments that we're put with that just weren't here like 100 years ago. Obviously, you know, 100 years ago there were different challenges that we faced, but it's like we face these very legitimate, very real challenges these days, and we have to gain consciousness and awareness to protect ourselves from the modern world around us. And, you know, sounds extreme in some ways, but it's true. And like what I find is that you know, the body will give us pain, or the mind will give us pain when something is wrong. But the people who it's not quite got bad enough to give them a health problem, but they're kind of going to be living in this subpar place by eating the foods that aren't good for them, and, you know, and being in the toxic environment, and you know, watching the toxic stuff on TV like for years maybe, and they're kind of going to fly under the radar, but still live with this like area of low health, maybe having low energy and not even really realizing that it's not their natural state.
Yeah, for sure. I think many people are living in a state that they think is normal, you know, or is normal for them, and it's totally not. The other day, someone mentioned that they had a health problem, and they were like, you know, but it's normal. And I was like, no, it's not normal. It's common, but it's not normal. You know, the minute you normalize this health issue, you're never going to heal it. You know, she came to me wanting to heal it, and she was like, but it's normal anyway. Like, so many people have it. And I was like, that's common, not normal. And that's the problem. It's like, just because things are common doesn't make them normal, doesn't make them okay. And it's, I think what's important is to start to not be okay with not being optimized. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to be a perfect person. Of course, we all have issues. We all get old. It's life. But you're instead of just being okay with not being okay, you're no longer okay with it. You know, you start to take action, and that only comes when you step into adulthood. And sometimes people step into adulthood at 60 years old, you know, taking responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And having the belief that something can change as well, because, you know, we are like people trying to fit into a society that is sick and ill. And when you're trying to fit in and do the same as everyone else, when everyone else is in kind of like the same boat of illness, it's going to produce the same result.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really like that. It's not normal, it's common. Because, you know, there's so many people who live with digestive issues who are just like, oh, it's normal, or back pain is some sort of resignation of something that happens when you get older, or you know, women with the menstrual cycle as well, having like painful and sometimes irregular menstrual cycles, which, you know, is common, but not necessarily normal, the state to be in. And like a lot of women will not realize that actually there's potentially like another way with it. But the thing is that we're so... men and women, our society, were so dysregulated and so far from how we are naturally supposed to be, which is, i.e., connected to nature, connected to ourselves, connected to our bodies.
Yeah, 100%. I think a big one is our disconnect from nature is like a massive issue in our society. Like, we live in a concrete jungle here in London. and you know, I feel it like when I have a day where I don't go into nature, like today, I haven't had time, I feel it, you know, but that's because I'm now conscious of the difference. I never used to even think about it. Like, nature, no nature, it just wasn't part of my day. It was like, I love a beach, you know, but I don't think about going to the park every day. Whereas now it's very much part of my daily routine, and it has to be. And it's incredible how it energizes you if you become conscious of it. You're feeling a bit low, go into nature, go for a walk in the park, have your phone away in your pocket on airplane mode, and just walk for 5 minutes. You know, look at the trees, look at the sky, look at the grass, look at the people around you. Just observe. You don't need to connect. You don't need to touch and hug the trees. Just observe, you know, and see what happens. And I think that's one of our biggest problems. But here we're lucky to have parks the way we do. In New York, for example, gee, I'm there for 5 days and I'm ready to leave. God. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So what are some of the changes that you'd like to see or feel that we need to make in terms of shifting our health and shifting our mindset towards a place of greater wholeness and vitality?
Nice question. I think we need to keep it basic to start. Like, people are overcomplicating things, you know, like do that, like a list of 100 different things to do to optimize your health and become this like shield against the world. It's like, keep it basic to start. You know, I would say get movement in, whether you're walking or you're able to train and lift weights, or you're boxing or you're doing football, whatever it is, just move the body. The body is made to move. So, you know, I think so many people have become lazy, super sedentary, and I think we need to start moving again as a society, like really moving on a daily basis. Nutrition-wise, I think it's super important that people start reading labels and understanding what's in the food they buy. A lot of the time we trust the image on the packet of a bee and a flower, and we're like, oh, it's healthy, you know? So I think it's important to understand the label and also like the ingredients and know which ones to avoid. For me, I would say avoid seed oils. If I could pick one right now, avoid seed oils, you know, canola oil, rapeseed oil, grapeseed oil, sunflower oil, vegetable oils, just avoid those oils for anyone listening. I'm sure everybody's heard this before. It's everywhere now, which I'm really happy about, but just avoid those, super toxic for the body. And yeah, I think that would be a really important thing for people to get more educated on nutrition. You know, it would be a dream if it was all in school. You know, there was like a nutritional therapist that could go into schools and do, you know, a couple hours a month even just to educate kids on food and to educate families and parents and the people who cook the food at the schools. You know, like it has to start from below, because if the kids get that information, that will just be passed down. It has to start somewhere, right? So I think that, and I think people just need to feel. People need to just feel their emotions more and stop, like, you know, giving whatever excuse they want to give that, oh, they're an alpha male and they can't feel, or, oh, it's too difficult, or, oh, my kids, or this and that. The real alpha males are the ones that feel. 100%. Those are the real alpha males. The alpha males want to be alpha males, and all they're doing is not. They're being a little scared boy, you know? Who doesn't want to feel? It's not, you know.
I love that. I'm laughing because it's just kind of like, alpha male. Why don't you feel? It's just, no, I'm an alpha male, so I can't feel.
But yeah, that's dialogue, right? It's like feeling. What do you like? I observe it when I have conversations with people I adore, and we have this conversation a lot. And I'm like, alpha male. An alpha male is a strong, masculine ideal, right? By suppressing anything, you're no longer strong, including suppressing your emotions. Of course, an alpha male, you know, when you look at them, they will never suppress their strength, and they will always fight against another human, and that's like the alpha that we perceive. But what about facing your emotions? Like, if you can face fear in reality, and you can face war in another human, or you can protect your family, what about facing your emotions? Like, what are you so scared about? You're happy to face the outside, but not the inside. And why, Jess, why do you think?
Well, yeah, this is like a really deep topic. Thanks for the question. So yeah, I think it is a generational societal challenge. And, you know, there's this whole boys don't cry mentality. And, you know, perhaps it stems from, you know, harder times when we're in the war, and, you know, it was very much a case of like, have to get through. And then these outdated ideas then got like passed down from generation to generation. And, you know, I think things are changing a lot, especially like at the moment. But if I think back to like my dad's generation, you know, 70s in Britain, it's like a rough time to be, you know. And, you know, we've had this rough time for many years. And I think that it's very much a protective mechanism of men to move into this space, which is, again, it's related to the patriarchal way of being that we've been in for a long period of time. And it's relates to repression of emotion, i.e. repression of the feminine. So I think it is outdated, and I think it's a protective mechanism to avoid being vulnerable. And it's understanding that it's a protective mechanism to avoid being vulnerable or costs. But the thing is that men don't realize that actually there's so much strength in being vulnerable and so much strength in vulnerability and bearing those emotions and saying like, yeah, I'm feeling this, it sucks, but it's here so I can process it, I can work with it, rather than bottling it up, because, you know, I see so many problems arise from it. You know, emotions are stored in the body. Anger, for instance, if we were to take anger and frustration, or like from this, like say an alpha male mentality of having to be bullish and having to, you know, assert one's dominance, which actually, you know, you could look at that as a deep sign of insecurity, the feeling that one needs to assert themselves as dominant figure. You know, it shows that, hang on, if there was true dominance there would be no need to assert the dominance.
Exactly.
So, mm-hmm. So you know, if there's this like angry, bullish temperament, what happens within the emotional system or the body is the pelvis tends to tip forward.
Interesting.
So the pelvis tips forward into this like open, aggressive stance. And this is basically it's like open chest, pelvis tilt forward, it's aggression. Now, this will cause back pain for the person often, because when the pelvis tips forward, lower back gets compressed, all due to a temperament of anger. And it's really interesting. I always like love looking at athletes and looking at the different body types and what's happening with their bodies. I kind of like analyze what's happening with them. Mm-hmm. And it's really surprising, because you'd be surprised how many athletes at the top of their game, like their bodies just aren't in check. Like I see some of the MMA guys, I'm like, man, your shoulders, like you've got this whole muscle area just not active. It's like, wow. But you know, if I was to look at MMA fighters, I've seen so many of them that have got this forward tilted pelvis. And the really interesting correlation, I mean, I'm looking more and more into this, is that the guys with the tilted pelvises tend to be the more aggy, have to kind of like alpha male dominance themselves.
Wow. So
it's really like interesting thing. So yeah, I think it's learned behavior, it's inherited trauma that's passed down. You know, if you've got an abusive father figure, then well, I think it goes one of two ways really. You either take on that behavior and go on to perpetuate that behavior with the world and maybe your children going onwards, or you learn from the pain of what happens from having that abusive role model. And then go the other way and construct a different life where you decide to do things differently. And this is a great thing when someone is able to do that, because then you're breaking the cycle and the chain of generational trauma. Mm-hmm. Because really the you know, this kind of bullish alpha male behavior is generational trauma passed down as learned behavior, and it's often to hide or avoid feeling deep senses of vulnerability and deep senses of low self-esteem. Because if the person was were very much sitting in their personal power, and I mean like power in the healthy sense, because like I find power is quite a loaded word in many ways, yeah, but there's nothing inherently wrong with power. It's power is a magnifier of what's within. So you know, if someone's really rooted in their power and really standing as a confident, well-rounded person, there's no need to be a certain dominance over others. It's just not required. And one could argue it's not required in our society now anyway. I mean, I've got, okay, when we were living in tribes, maybe there's more of a discussion and justification for that kind of thing, because, you know, when it is like literally living in a warrior culture whereby this other tribe might come and kill us, then, you know, you're a strong leader. But then at the same time, to juxtapose that, the strong leader is the leader that can manage the relationships of the tribe, manage the relationships of the other tribe, and not bring war upon the tribes. Whereas like the bullish alpha male, quote unquote, is the one
causes that war.
Say again.
Causes war.
Causes war, yeah. And causes problems and isn't a very good leader, you know? And there's this funny thing, because I find it really funny actually terming this whole behavior as alpha male, because it's just like, no, you're being a terrible male.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You're not out doing anything. It's just is very beta, if anything. And you know, you're not protecting the tribe. You're not creating that safe container for the tribe and the people around you to flourish in, which is what like the true essence of quote unquote like alpha male should be, or like really, I mean, like do we need an alpha male? Why don't we have like lots of quote unquote alpha male, or like lots of strong men all coming together to create a collaboration whereby the container is really held in a beautiful, strong way, so that you know everyone within that container can flourish.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's so important, all the work that's going on, like these men's circles and men coming together to heal that, because the feminine's been suppressed, but so has the divine masculine. You know, because the divine masculine is the masculine that embodies the feminine. So the suppression of the feminine has also meant the suppression of the divine masculine. And so it's not, you know, society right now is very much about like feminism and women's rights. Sure, I agree, but it's not just women that have been suppressed. Like in terms of power, yes, sure, agreed. But in terms of like well-being and love and joy and positivity, men as well. Men have been super suppressed because they have not felt safe to feel anything, to feel their emotions. So I think right now there's, you know, by men and women both doing this work and both entering into healing, there's a big opening for the divine feminine and the divine masculine to kind of take over. And I think that's just you know, those two words, divine feminine, divine masculine, are just, it's just a mirror for a rising consciousness on the planet.
It's a really beautiful articulation of it. Yeah, thank you for that. And it brings to mind, actually, when talking about that wounded divine masculine, has put me in mind of all of these little boys in all of these men's bodies. And, you know, you see in all of these men's bodies with, you know, maybe holding unconfident postures or holding aggressive postures or being in difficult spaces. And, you know, all of this really comes back to a little boy that needs to be shown love, and women as well. You know, we've got a little boy and a little girl inside of all of us. And, you know, cycles back to what you're saying at the start about inner child healing. It's like, that inner child is really well looked after and really healed and really in a good place whereby he or she is abundant, happy, engaged in play. This is a big part of the connection that I think we need to really reestablish as a society in order for us to move to a place of more wholeness and happiness as a global society. Because, you know, if we prescribe to the theory that we're all one collective being, the pulse of the heartbeat of humanity, then we do this work on ourselves, we share that work with others, we help others to do that work, and then slowly but surely, things change in the world through the ripple effect that we create.
Yeah, and it's passed down, you know, like kids are then born into conscious families. They're born into a family where the masculine feels and the feminine feels, and they have a relationship where they're able to communicate well because they're doing the work. You know, like the only way out is in, right? The only way out of this mess is in. You know, it's like we can change everything on the outside. You know, we can change the systems and the infrastructure of our world. And I think that's necessary. But the only way that our world will change is by people changing from within and evolving more than changing, evolving and, you know, stepping into a greater version of themselves. And it takes work, and the work isn't easy. That's what people need to understand. Like, spirituality is not easy. It's not.
But it's worth it.
But it's worth it. Like, it's
worth it.
Yeah, 100%. The freedom, the joy, the peace, the trust, the relationships, life becomes magical. And you start to see how magical it is, and you no longer have excuses for that magic. It's no longer Oh no, surely not. Oh, impossible. There's no more excuses. You just accept it and you let yourself accept it because you're worthy of having it.
Amen. Amen.
Amen, man.
Yeah. Okay. So like if someone's listening to this conversation and you know it's and it's they're getting to a place of like, wow, yeah, okay, I'm inspired to embark on some sort of quest whereby I do the work. I recognize that there's some things in my life that aren't quite working. And I'm not sure about these tools. I've not really done that much work, but you know what? I want to start. I want to do something. So, what could you say or advise to this kind of person who wants to change but may not know where to start?
Well, I would say get into breath work. Get into breath work because what the breath tends to do is reveals to you where you need to go. You know, it's not necessarily working with someone who's going to tell you where you need to go. It's about using the tool that you have with you every day and guiding yourself to that place of knowing where you need to go. So I would say to anyone listening who wants that change, start to get into breath work, you know, whether that's with me or not with me, with the Rhizome, not with the Rhizome, just start to get into breath work. You can obviously contact me and the Rhizome, no problem, but it's got so much magic to it. And I heard on a documentary recently called Stuts. It's Jonah Hill and his therapist. Okay, so he's interviewing his therapist for like 90 minutes, and it's sensational documentary. I really recommend watching it. Really interesting, really raw, and really real. And he says something fabulous, which is he says, look, people come to me all the time not knowing where to go with their life. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do with their life. Some of them are in their 20s, some of them are in their 30s and 40s. They just don't know where to go. And he says that to guide them, he will never tell them what to do. He will never advise them on where to go, but he helps work on their life force. So exercise, nutrition, and mental health, so that when their life force starts to, you know, enhance, so do their passions. It ignites their fire, their passions. And as a result, they'll start going out into the world and doing things, and it will guide them to a path that's meaningful for them. And that stuck with me because it's so true. Like, if you don't know what to do, work on your life force, work on your chi, your prana, your energy, you know, like breathe, move, connect, eat well, you know, hang out with people that are helping lift you know, not people that are sitting there talking about other people. If you want to rise, you haven't got time for that. You know, you're there to lift people, and people are there to lift you. So I would say first thing, start with breath work, and contact someone to work with, because that's the best way you learn. That's how I've learned everything I've learned is through others. Yeah.
Brad, yeah, it's powerful. Thank you. So I'm going to start drawing things to a close because I know you got a dash in a little while. So I've got just got a couple more questions for you, and yeah, so like this question I like to ask each guest that comes on, and this is yeah, it's my favorite question actually. So Phoenix Vision is dedicated to creating a transformative vision of health for its listeners. So what does transformation mean to you, and what would you like to transform in the future?
Oof, nice. Transformation for me is when, well, for people, is when people can move from where they are to where they want to be. And transformation is the process of going from A to B, B being where they want to be. And that may entail, you know, taking up new things, breaking down old belief systems, you know, going through joyful moments and difficult moments. And I think transformation is encompassing all of those things, the breaking down and the building up to become who you want to be. And what would I like to transform in the future? Well, my goal and vision is really to, I'd like to eventually try and have my own space where I can run, you know, the health side of things for the ladies. So really working on physical, nutritional, and spiritual health on a personalized level, and then have a space where we can host epic events in collaboration with amazing people such as yourself, and just bring knowledge, bring healing and transformation to people's lives in a way that's structured and organized and fun, and in a way that also gives them the tools to be able to continue after the experience, you know? And yeah, that's it really. For me, it's helping transform as many lives as I can in a positive way.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm going to put some cedar on for a bit. Yeah. No, I mean, you've got a real strong vision and a really important mission. So I wish you the very best for all of it. I mean, you're already changing lives and, you've been changing lives for ages. And I'm sure we can continue to do so and help many, 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 many people to come. So, yeah, rad. So, Amy, Rise Room, how can people find out about it? And I know you've got a few events coming up. Yeah, love for you to share. So if it resonates with anyone listening, then they can get involved.
Yeah, for sure. So for anyone listening, you can contact me through Instagram. That's Amy Bookler, at Amy Bookler. On my profile is the Rise Room accounts, both for the experiences and the method, the service for women. So Instagram, and the website is theriseroom.com. Super simple. You can contact me through either of them, emails on the website, and then obviously through Instagram. And the events. Yes. So on the 26th of February, we have a breathwork and sound healing event. I'm in collaboration with two amazing individuals, my friend Jordan, who is an amazing breath worker, who's going to be co-facilitating with me, and Navita, who is an incredible Indian devotional sound healer. And we're going to be really, you know, providing an amazing experience. And then our next event is a cacao ceremony with breathwork and sound healing on the 18th of March, both in London.
Amazing. So yeah, I'll be getting down to the 26th. I'm interviewing Jordan tomorrow on the podcast. Actually, yeah. Amazing. So yeah, we'll get a double shout out for that event for sure.
Yes.
So yeah, knowing Amy and the work and dedication she puts into everything she does, like, come to these events, they're going to be fantastic. I've had some amazing feedback. I haven't been to one yet, but I'm looking forward to going one at the end of the month. But the feedback I've had from other people who've been is that it's like very special. So yeah, if you're listening, 26th February, 18th of March, come on down.
All the details on Instagram and the website, so you can find it there.
Awesome. Oh, Amy, this has been a really great podcast. Like, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for your time, your energy, your dedication to the cause of helping people heal. It's been really great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess, and thanks for this platform. Amazing platform. Keep going. And for anyone listening, Jess is the best.
So is Amy. So much love. Thank you so much.
Bye.